What's up? It's Draymond Green. I'm back for my 14th NBA season, and my podcast, The Draymond Green Show, is back too. This season, I'm breaking down games, reacting to the biggest NBA stories, and sitting down with teammates, rivals, and culture shapers. And trust me, I'm not holding back, on the court or on the mic. Two new episodes every week, new segments, big conversations, real basketball talk for the real hoop heads. Listen to and follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts. We're back, we're better, let's get it.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan, where you got me, Kevin Hagelin. You got, Corey Majors. And, of course, the famous Alec Medford. Gentlemen, welcome to the program. How you doing and how is everybody out there in radio land doing? 877-881-1053. The Frankel and Frankel Injury Attorney text line or the Twitch or the YouTube. Gentlemen, I'll let you start.
Kevin.
Corey's not ready yet. Alec, it might be up to you.
Things are going swell. But at the moment, I'm still trying to get the whole setup squared away.
Okay.
So, but everything's going really good.
What is it that you need from Sean to better facilitate this?
I need him and Dawson to not move the microphone.
Okay.
I need him to leave our text logged in and our Twitch up.
Okay.
And I need... That's pretty much it.
All right.
Yeah, those two things. But other than that, things are fine. Things are great, man. It's okay. Wednesday, dude. You know what Wednesday means?
Go have sex day.
Hell yeah. Tolo Go Day. Tolo Go Day was built for Wednesday. All right.
Isn't that what hump day means?
Hump day. Like, that's the thing that happened to me, Alec, this morning.
Oh,
I was reading.
No.
Well, hold on. I was reading Twitter, and it was the official 105.3 The Fan Twitter page, all right? At 105.3, I'm assuming The Fan. And
yes.
And you could also follow the show at KNC105.3. And it said, hey, do you want the hump day edition? And my brain went, hump day? Like, immediately.
Okay.
So immediately, all I think is hump day whenever I know it's Wednesday. And I don't think about the fact that it's an actual hump in the week. I think about the fact that hump means do the humpty hump.
Yeah,
baby, do the humpty hump. Oh.
Do me, baby.
I wasn't going to say that part, Kevin. That feels a little aggressive. But
that's you don't want to start teasing our show by being like, it's the Wednesday edition. Let's go F right here on The Fan.
If that's what the Tolos want, that's what we'll do. All right?
But great.
We are not a show of ourselves. We are a show for the Tolos.
Mm. So, Alec, how are you doing? That was Corey telling us how he was doing, I suppose. Alec, how are you doing?
I just want to start compiling, like, a list or an audio vault of Corey Major's moments that have altered my brain chemistry. Because that's one of them.
Yeah.
I was doing good, and now I have many thoughts that are swirling in my head that have nothing to do with being productive. Or doing radio. So,
how
yeah.
How do you spell thoughts, though?
We can talk about that off air.
All right.
Yeah.
G-H-T-S. Kevin, how do you spell thoughts?
T-H-O-U-G-H-T-S.
Every time I say thought, I thought this, my son goes, oh, you thought? And I'm like,
T-H-O-T. Yeah. I get what you're saying.
Yeah, but everything's good.
What do you mean?
I'm not, is it that hoe over there? Is that what it is?
I love how he asks it because he doesn't want to be like, oh man, what a break.
I know about that because of y'all.
Yeah.
Anyways, we're going to try to quick hit some things right here. And you know what? Go ahead and play cut number two. I don't know why, Alec, if you've noticed this. Sometimes the audio that you have makes me angry, kind of a little bit at you, even though it's not your fault that the stars crapped the bed last night. So I apologize if I ever give you attitude when I call for an audio clip that I know is going to make me sad, because it's not your fault that the stars looked terrible last night. Play the audio!
Why the shot tip? Left and back of the goal, Seneca takes it out, he scores! Beckett Seneca, a rookie, finds the cash, and the Ducks have a 2-0 lead.
And what in the blue hell continues to be going on with the Stars? This is not a good team. that you lost to last night. Anaheim broke a 9-game winless streak. They had not won a game since December 20th. And yes, I realize by bringing that up, that opens up the path for every single person to be like, oh, one in a year? Oh, Kevin, I haven't talked to you since last year. That's how angry I am about this dumb Stars loss that I'm going to open it up for that potential discussion. But yeah, this is a team that hadn't won in like 3 weeks.
Yeah.
More than 3 weeks.
Yeah, the Stars currently are your get-right team. If you want to get right,
sucks.
You can play against the Stars and you're going to do okay. And they're not that bad of a team. They're stock full of talent.
For sure.
It's did you feel last night in the first period, Kevin, I was like, this is going to be a problem. Because it looked like Anaheim was just intense. Like, in the first period alone, I was like, they're coming at you. And you're letting them come at you. And I'm not used to seeing that from the Stars, but that's what this stretch has been like. It's felt like other teams can just go at you, and
yeah.
You don't have an answer to them.
Yeah, and look, and it didn't help that right before the game, you find out that Miro is going to be out. I know Gullitson said it was a personal issue. It should be short term, but it always feels like it's a bad sign when one of your best players you find out right before the game is not going to be out there. I thought Casey DeSmith was solid again. If we're talking about people that, because realistically, he gave up 2 goals and had only given up 1 through the first 2 periods before the Beckett goal kind of made it feel like maybe the game was out of reach, though Roppe scored late. I think Casey DeSmith, if we're going through Stars players that have played at the absolute minimum to your expectations and more than likely beyond your expectations, I feel like Casey DeSmith is pretty dang high up on that list.
Oh, I mean, to the point of, and you know, one of the things Robert Tiffin was talking about with us yesterday, Kevin, was the don't take it not seriously that Casey DeSmith has the back-to-back games.
Right.
And that has a lot to do with Otter, but also a lot to do with the way DeSmith's playing. And that's one of the other things, Kevin, I was thinking last night as the game was going along. I was like, man, we have been pretty blessed with some good netminder play as Stars fans over our years, you know, with obviously Belfour, Turco, you know, like we've had some really good. Kari Lehtinen was really good for a while, and then he fell apart. Bishop was really good. Dobby was awesome for his stretch. So I was like, man, we've been very lucky to be able to find good netminders. Have we ever had the best? Have we ever had the best dude? Or is this kind of like the Stars where you're really good across the board?
Yeah.
But you don't have the best player anywhere.
And I think, you know, that's an intriguing hypothesis because I think that's one of the reasons people were so jacked up about bringing in Rantanen, because you thought maybe he could be the best. Look, that's putting aside the fact that
Connor McDavid
exactly.
exists.
Exactly. Connor McDavid exists. But I think when you say the best, it doesn't have to always be number one. It's like, oh,
a top five,
yeah,
top three
exactly,
player.
Who on any particular night can be the best player on the ice. And I think that's what jazzed so many people up.
You felt about, like that with Otter sometimes.
Yes, exactly.
Not
and so
this year.
Otter is a great example. There are times when I'm like, man, he really is one of the best goalies on the planet. And then there are other times where you're like, I don't really know what that was. I feel like you can say the same thing about Hintz. We've already talked about it with Harley. I think you can say the same thing about Heiskanen. Obviously, we've had multiple conversations about that with Robertson. And I think that's one of the intriguing reasons that you brought over Rantanen. It's not only because of the pure talent, but you're like, oh no, I've seen plenty of games where
he takes over.
Exactly. And he becomes the best player on the ice.
That was, go back to Toronto winning the national championship, not the NBA championship. When Toronto won, throughout that run, Kawhi Leonard was the one in the fourth quarter that said, my game, guys.
Right.
No, I can still get assists, but it's my game now. And that's when I talk about, when you hear me say it, it's not just a word. Transcend. Whenever it becomes time, somebody else goes into another dimension and becomes somebody else completely and says, my game, nobody else is getting this game from me. And yes, we've seen Rantanen do it once. We've seen him do it before. Feels like Draisaitl does it against us all the time. He's like,
oh,
guys, don't worry, Connor, you're fine. I'm good over here. But this is the one where I'm like, okay, who's going to? I love Jason Robertson, because I know he can give me a goal in a game most nights. I know he's going to give me good effort. I know I'm going to get something that's like, wow, that was awesome. Great job. But do I believe that if the game's on the line, Jason Robertson's going to take over? I don't yet. I need to see it, but I'm hopeful to see it at some point. But I do feel like Rantanen occasionally can. Occasionally he can disappear, too.
Yeah. Look, and so I saw this come in, and I hear what people are saying on this. It's the Stars' third game in the last 4 days. They're on a road trip. But that ignores the bigger picture that we've been talking about for like the last 3 weeks, right? Okay, so let's say going up to the Montreal game, you'd been playing well, and then you hit this five-game road trip, and you're like, well, you went 2-2-1, so you got half your possible points. That's and I know you still have Utah to go, but so far you're like, that's not so bad. All right, but if you count the Montreal game and you go back, three of which were home games, you had lost five straight going into this road trip. So I don't want to discount the three games in 4 days and being on the road trip, but I feel like that ignores what happened on the other side of it. And when you combine what happens on the other side of it, you have now lost eight of your last 10 games.
Ah!
And this one last night,
you don't think you should have at all?
I do, actually. I think you probably should have lost this game worse.
Okay.
I thought the score, especially when you pulled your goalie, you scored no 5-on-5 goals yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
Because when Roppe scored, you'd pulled your goalie
that
for an extra attacker.
That was one of the first things I wanted to make sure I kept track of.
Exactly. And so, like, I don't even think this game was as particularly as close as the score would lead you to. And then when you factor in no 5-on-5 goals, then when you factor in you've lost 8 of your last 10, like, that's a lot to build up.
I will add in last night during the intermission between games. The broadcast was talking about the game previously, and they were like, look, man, these back-to-backs can be killer. And they did point that part out, and I was like, yeah. And then my brain goes, oh, crap, we're on a back-to-back.
Right.
This isn't good for us. So can we just not can they not schedule back-to-backs?
All right.
Like, come on, it's 82 games. Spread it out a little bit.
Well, I have great news for you.
We don't have any more for the rest of the year.
Okay, I have moderate news for you.
Yeah.
You actually, you know what, based on what you just said, I have terrible news
for
you.
Oh, crap!
I'm sorry. Your expectations have made me lower this. I was going to say you only have one more back-to-back before the Olympics, but knowing you, I know the follow-up is, oh, okay, and then after that, we're free and clear. No, right after the Olympics, that, like, next week, you have another back-to-back and stuff. And so, like, they're not going away, but I feel like other teams in the NHL have back-to-backs as well.
Abolish back-to-back sports. Like, it's good for us as fans because we get it. But I wonder how often coaches just kind of cue in, this is probably a loss. We really need the first one. But if they're coming off of a tough stretch, look, guys, this first one might not be the one. Let's cruise tonight, get things in order, and the second one's the one we're going to attack.
Okay.
I mean, I know you want to attack every day, but...
So I think one of the issues you run into with NHL and both the NBA, since those seasons run pretty much parallel, is your season's already, your regular season's what, like 7 months long?
Mm-hmm.
And then your playoffs are probably looking about the better part of 2 months. So your season's already almost 9 months long. And, like, I didn't even really, and that kind of factors in the preseason. So if you get rid of back-to-backs, are we going to get to a point where we're going to extend it out to 9.5 months long, 10 months long? Like,
that is a valid question. I want a 12-month long schedule for all sports. Let's just always sport.
And you're going to have more back-to-backs this year because they took out 2.5 weeks.
Because of the Olympics.
For the Olympics.
Yeah.
But you're still going to have, in future seasons, some back-to-backs.
All-star break. Yeah. Yeah, I get you.
Okay, so you want to eliminate all outside forces. No all-star break. No Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, if you did that, you could probably get rid of the back-to-backs.
Yeah, probably so. I like the idea.
I don't know if the rest of the league would be super pumped about that.
Stop complaining about the back-to-backs then.
You're the one who brought it up!
Because of them.
Who's the them in that sentence?
Good point.
Okay.
Did you not consider that yet?
I... You know
the players, dude, they're the ones that complain about it. They're like, oh, actually, they don't. It's the media that complains for them about it.
Man.
So back to me again.
I feel like I'm in the middle of an inception right now. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, we power rank the remaining NFL playoff teams and quarterbacks, if we have time. Next on The Fan.
From the 19, Stafford going towards the end zone. Parkinson! What a catch! And a touchdown!
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Let's turn our attention over to the NFL, and we were power rank the remaining NFL playoff teams and quarterbacks. Gentlemen, I would love to get y'all's list on this, though I can give you a national list as well if you are interested. Would you like to start with the teams or the quarterbacks?
I'd like to start with the quarterbacks.
Ooh, okay. Eggie. Thanks.
I don't think I ever call you that.
Everybody else does,
and it felt weird.
Okay.
The way that Bobby says it makes it feel weird, too. I don't know why.
Oh, I guess I haven't noticed that.
Like, he's like, you know, when Hagee does this, and I'm just like, it kind of sounds like bacon, too.
Huh.
And it makes me hungry.
Okay. Well, that was a lot of information for 15 seconds. I liked it. Will you tell me, Corey, we'll start with you, who you think are the least best two quarterbacks?
It's Draymond Green, kicking off my 14th NBA season and the new season of my podcast. And trust me, I'm not holding back. Listen to the Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Or maybe you think one of them's the worst. Left in the NFL playoffs.
At number 8.
I already know what you're going to say.
I would probably put Bo Nix.
Oh, that is not what I thought you were going to say in my face.
Well, just because I wanted to zig when you thought I was going to zag.
Hold on. Did you just alter your list?
Number
for me?
7 is Sam Darnold.
Okay.
And with Bo Nix, I just need to see a little bit more to push him in front of Sam Darnold. But I think that Bo Nix just still, I have a question mark on some of his throws. Not necessarily his decision making that much. I think that him and Sean Payton put a good plan together.
Okay.
To keep their defense from being exhausted. Because the whole key is you have to sustain drives to keep your defense from being out there. The other night there was the play where Rankins ran it in for the touchdown against the Steelers. And he's sitting on the sideline, and he's kind of going through the whole, like, here's what I did. I just grabbed the ball and everything. And I can't remember if it was Hunter or Will Anderson was next to him and had the oxygen. And through the oxygen, you could see him say, let's hope this offense can sustain a drive. And this was this wasn't directly after, because it was directly after they did that, made a stop, and now the offense has the ball. And you could see him say that, and you could see Rankins go, oh, yeah, because they were tired, too.
Yeah.
And you saw the Steelers being tired. All Bo Nix needs to do a lot of times is sustain drive so his defense can keep him in the game.
All right, so I'm intrigued by something that you said, and we're going to loop back around to this once y'all's list is done, both of you guys. Which quarterback has the most mobility on this list? I don't mean mobility on the field. I mean mobility in the playoffs, as in I could see this quarterback moving way up or way down. We'll loop back around to that once we're done. All right, Alec, your two least best starting quarterbacks left in the NFL playoffs. I don't know why I said it like that.
Yeah, we're just eradicating all the quarterbacks from the NFL. I kind of like it. I would say C.J. Stroud is in there at this point after that awful performance.
Is he at 8?
I'd put him at 8, yeah.
Okay.
I'd say, and I still think he's really good. I think he just had a bad game.
Sure, I hear you.
Then I'd put Sam Darnold there, just because, again, we know what he is in these situations, but we haven't seen him play because he's a 1 seed. So I'd say those two in that order, I'd go 8, C.J. Stroud, 7, Sam Darnold.
All right. Corey, will you give me 6 and 5, please?
I think 6 will be C.J. Stroud for me.
Okay.
Mostly because of experience level. He needs more time on, Bobby says this a lot, time on task.
Yeah.
He looked very confused a lot of times against Pittsburgh. Again, Pittsburgh can do that to you. Maybe he just hates the cold. But he didn't look the fumbling issues throughout the game. There are moments where there looks like nobody more comfortable in the pocket. And then other moments where you're just like, he's panicking. So I think Stroud, he just needs a little bit more from me. And then I'm having a little bit of a problem. Because when you ask about mobility, I think Caleb Williams could be one or he could be eight.
He is one of the options, I think, for who could switch on that.
And I feel like Brock Purdy is kind of right. Like, you know exactly what you're getting from Brock Purdy most nights.
Yeah.
You're getting a brilliant game plan from Shanahan that's going to set up opponents throughout the game, and he's going to execute it perfectly. So I'll go with Caleb Williams 5.
Okay.
And that'll push Brock Purdy 4 for me.
All right. Alex, 6 and 5.
Ooh, I'd go Bo Nix at 6.
Okay.
Because, again, I think he can fluctuate depending on how he plays and if he remains in the playoffs after this weekend. Then I'd probably, I think I'd go Caleb right in the middle there. Okay. I'd say right around 5. I could listen to 4. I could listen to 3. Like Corey said, he can move around a lot, but I'd probably put Caleb at 5 just because it wasn't perfect.
So right now you guys have the same quarterbacks in the top 4 because you both have Caleb at 5, Sam Darnold at 7, and then Corey, you have Stroud at 6 and Nix at 8, and Alec, you have Nix at 6 and Stroud at 8. You said Purdy is 4.
Yep.
Who's your 3?
It's going to be Drake May.
Okay.
And I think this is fun because I saw somebody talking about who throws the prettiest football, and I was like, dude, Drake May.
Yeah.
You watch him throw, and you're just impressed. He has mobility. Not mobility to go up and down, but he can run. He has a lot of qualities, but not enough experience to take over the top 2 spots yet for me.
Alec, you're 4 and 3.
Number 4, I'm going to go Brock Purdy.
Okay.
Unless he decides to do randomly like he likes to do sometimes and be Superman and start running around with the ball, then he could easily be 3. 3, I'm going to go with Drake May as well. As much as I love him, I can't put him above Stafford yet.
Okay, which brings us to the top 2. Y'all both have Allen and Stafford in the top 2. How does the ranking go?
All year long, I've been very consistent with Matt Stafford being my number 1 quarterback. Today, this changes.
Oh!
And it's for the simple fact that, like, I know Matt Stafford can escape the pocket sometimes. He's shown that ability. Josh Allen, though, puts a cape on every Sunday.
Yeah.
And I think Matt Stafford benefits a lot from having a pretty great offensive coordinator, like a genius offensive coordinator as head coach. Like, that dude puts a fantastic plan together. And I think he also benefits from having one of the number, if not the top 3 receiver in the league, if not the number 1. I mean, Smith and Jigba and Puka
right.
Vying for it. And then obviously Pickens was 3rd, but nobody gave him the credit because of the on-field play wasn't considered.
No! I thought we did our presentation. He felt like he was very clearly the 4th or 5th best
you
receiver.
You presented
in football.
It. I disagreed because I love George Pickens and obviously you don't. But I understand what you're trying to do. You're trying to knock down the value of his price. I see that. Yeah. Now that I know that, I'm sorry, Kevin.
He's a $28 billion receiver.
But Josh Allen puts a cape on and I got to give him. Now, I'm concerned about physically how he's going to be able to manage these playoffs if he keeps playing this style.
Or if the rest of his team keeps dropping.
Jeez Louise, man. So, but I'll give Josh, this is quarterback ranking.
Yep.
I'll give it to Josh Allen first.
Alec, what say you?
Sorry, Corey, I got to go inverse there. I'm going to put Stafford at 1 and Josh Allen at 2 just because Josh Allen has not done the things that I think he is capable of doing in the postseason yet. And I've seen Stafford do it, and I saw him do that. The highlight that we played coming back from break was that final touchdown to go ahead against the Panthers where he absolutely locked in after being imperfect most of the game. I've seen Stafford do it before. I think he's going to do it again at this point more times than Josh Allen, but I hope it is Josh Allen's year.
All right. I have a couple of bonus questions for you, and we're going to get to the mobility. So is Matthew Stafford a Hall of Famer?
I think so. I think he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame.
Okay.
Do I think he's the Hall of Fame of the Hall of Fame? No.
Right.
But I think he will. I think he should wear a gold jacket.
Alec?
100%.
Okay.
He is in my mind.
Then my next question. Will Josh...
What's up? It's Draymond Green. I'm back for my 14th NBA season, and my podcast, The Draymond Green Show, is back too. This season, I'm breaking down games, reacting to the biggest NBA stories, and sitting down with teammates, rivals, and culture shapers. And trust me, I'm not holding back, on the court or on the mic. Two new episodes every week, new segments, big conversations, real basketball talk for the real hoop heads. Listen to and follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts. We're back, we're better, let's get it.
Josh Allen be a Hall of Famer? Because one of the things Stafford has going for him, and I get it, people get mad about wins are not a quarterback stat. I hear you. Hall of Fame voters seem to think that is inaccurate.
Mm-hmm.
And Matthew Stafford has won a Super Bowl. So the question I present to you.
I do wonder, because by the time Josh Allen gets there, the voting room might look different.
That's fair.
And this is
I can't project.
Yeah,
for
this
that.
Is a conversation like we might get to have later.
For sure.
Because as the game has changed, have the rules changed for those things? Because the game was never as important on the quarterback or as heavy on the quarterback as it is now. And you see Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, those guys take on the entire game for them. And I do wonder how much more importance people put on that, the fact that Josh Allen's name is mentioned so often, or if they just go back and go, all pro, these numbers, and that's how we decide this. And obviously, championship games and Super Bowls.
Yep.
Will he be? Not without a Super Bowl.
All right, so if you had to pick right now...
No.
He does not make the Hall of Fame.
Unfortunately, no, based on old people standards.
I hear.
We need to invigorate this thing with some youth, though.
Okay, I like that. Alec, whether you base it on old people standards or not, that is up to you. Will Josh Allen go to the Pro Football Hall of Fame?
Corey actually kind of changed my thinking with the old people standards.
Thank
because
you.
I do think the voters will be different and have a different thought process by the time his name is even eligible. So I do think the idea, kind of like we talk about with Darren Woodson, you know, the idea of changing the position and your impact on the game itself, I think that's going to matter more in the future when it comes to Hall of Fame consideration. And the fact that every time Josh Allen touches the football field, you see the first time in NFL history stat pretty much every game at this point. He's breaking records. He's setting standards that we haven't seen before. He's got an MVP to his name. I think he will be.
All right. And... I'm playing some devil's advocate here, okay? Somebody said, yes, it's no different than Dan Marino. I'm just going to throw this out there. Dan Marino led the NFL in passing yards 5 times. Josh Allen, none. He led the league in passing touchdowns 3 times. Josh Allen, none. So I hear what you're saying from a... It seems like he's an elite quarterback with potentially no Super Bowl. Though he's only 29 now, still plenty of time to go. But I do think there are some differences. Josh Allen is a damn fine player. People really thought that Dan Marino revolutionized the position. And I'm not quite sure if that same thought is there for Josh Allen as opposed to, man, he's so freaking good. You
yeah.
know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And Kevin, it's your fault that I think the way I do about the Hall of Fame regarding quarterbacks.
Oh, because of our study.
You did
yeah.
a study that gave me factual information. Now that study might be outdated, and you might have to revisit that at some point.
For sure.
But I think it's been
that.
Pretty consistent, yeah. and it's been pretty accurate.
Yeah, yeah. No, all that information was not presented with my opinion whatsoever. All right, so now to the question. Corey, you have Allen 1, Stafford 2, May 3, Purdy 4, Williams 5, Stroud 6, Darnold 7, and Bo Nix. Who has the most mobility in terms of changing their ranking, whether it's for better or for worse, in your ranking?
Caleb Williams and then Bo Nix. Because I don't think I can feel like Josh Allen's 8.
For sure. Yeah.
But like I can see him being
below Sam
like
Darnold.
Five's about
That'd
as far
amazing.
As I can go down
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
Drake May does like I feel like I know where Drake May is too. Brock Purdy, I know where he is. So I would and CJ Stroud could change my mind, but this season offensively, they've relied so much on their defense, I don't think he will. So I would say Caleb Williams 1 and Bo Nix 2 for mobility throughout the rankings.
Okay, so you see both potential quarterbacks moving up the board. All right, Alec, for you.
Or down.
Okay, well, that is not what you said. Alec, for you, who could move the most? Which quarterback could move up or down this rankings the most? Because you've got Stafford 1, then Allen, May, Purdy, and then Caleb Williams at 5, Nix, Darnold, and Stroud.
Honestly, I would say Nix, but I'm tempted to say Purdy. Because
Ooh.
I've seen him off schedule make some incredible decisions that make him look like one of the elite quarterbacks in the league. Then he has his games where he is strictly a game manager, and he's fine. But he can turn it on sometimes. He really can, and he can take control of a game. So I'll throw Purdy in the mix.
Okay.
Kevin, I know that we got clock here, but a lot of people are asking this, and I don't know how this fits into the study. Total touchdowns. Because that never mattered.
Good question.
During the Randall Cunningham era, you know, because he was still competing with guys that were pure passers. And I wonder how, because of the way the game has changed, how much total touchdowns changes the movement of Josh Allen and maybe a Lamar or so, even a Patrick Mahomes is already in.
Good question. I will attempt to crunch the numbers in the break.
Good job.
And get back with you on the other side. Coming up next, the answer to that. But also, baseball nuggets. Do MLB front offices think the Rangers front office is any good? Next on The Fan. KNC Masterpiece right here on 105 through The Fan. We're going to have baseball nuggets in just a few minutes. But first, we have multiple football updates for you. I'm going to go to Alec for probably the most relevant football update.
We do have some Cowboys news. The Cowboys are requesting permission to interview Eagles defensive backs coach and passing game coordinator Christian Parker for their vacant defensive coordinator job via Jordan Schultz. Some background on him. He's been coaching since he was 22. He's had interviews in the past for DC openings and key part of Vic Fangio's defenses in the past. And you think about the work that he's done this year, Cooper DeJean and Quinion Mitchell for the Eagles, both first-team All-Pro selections this year. So, and he works directly with them as their position coach. So highly regarded around the NFL, not his first time getting interviews, but the Cowboys have requested permission.
I like this. This is one of those where, not because it's an Eagles guy, all right?
Although we do have that drop now.
He's also an A&M guy.
Okay, that amount.
He was at the Packers and the Broncos. But, like, I like this for multiple reasons. One, as you pointed out, the talent of those two cornerbacks, like, you see it. He's worked with some other really good and talented cornerbacks as well. Knows what that expectation is. And I really like this. I like this interview. I'm not saying that it's going to happen, like, this is going to be the guy. But these are the types of names. Whenever you have old school coaches that are just like, yeah, bring in the guy that I know that's been, you know, this is like, hey, who's the name around here that we need to know? It seems like Schottenheimer's looking into these people.
All right. I'm glad that you said that. Maybe we're going to shift some stuff around just a little bit. Because I'm very sorry if I use Jonathan Gannon as an example.
I don't love it.
But I keep thinking about, what are you looking for from your coach? We were talking about this with Flores yesterday. Obviously, you want somebody who is either going to A, fix the scheme, fit the scheme, or B, somebody who has an idea that you're on the same page with about how to make your talent work within your scheme, whether that's the players already fit the scheme you're going to run or the draft capital and salary cap you have leads a very clear path of players that you can pick up that would fit the scheme. But the other thing that I'm interested in is, so Jonathan Gannon, much like Eberflus, feels like somebody who went up and now you're going to catch them back on the way down. Because that's what
Eberflus did. It's a very Cowboys hire,
yeah,
too.
Exactly. Because Eberflus, he was a head coach. Wow, head coach, and lots of experience. Can't have too many head coaches
keep
in the room and everything like that. Like, that's cool. Do you want that? Because that does seem to be the Cowboys' MO. Or do you want the guy, like Alex said, that's been coaching since he was 22 and worked his way up from Virginia State to Norfolk State to now the Philadelphia Eagles, where he was their defensive backs coach last year when they won the Super Bowl, but has not been a defensive coordinator yet. And I know that's just part of it, because there can be a lot behind everybody's individual story. But I'm intrigued by, do you guys like the idea of the coach that's potentially ascending as opposed to the coach like Jonathan Gannon, sorry again, that perhaps is descending like Eberflus was before? Where do you guys fall on that? Because we know the Cowboys' opinion is, you were a head coach? Well, that's neat.
The fact that this guy's been able to continue to ascend despite having played or coached for Jimbo Fisher is a really big, like, that's a big thing for me, because we all know Jimbo. But no, the Cowboys don't do that.
Yeah.
And it felt like Schottenheimer wasn't that. Even though Schottenheimer was a first-time head coach, it felt like Schottenheimer wasn't an ascending guy that you're like, dude, he's got all these new great creative ideas. However, don't you feel like Schottenheimer came in and kind of injected this like feeling of that?
Sure.
Whether or not he coached that way every game is a different story. But the other thing you're taking is you're taking a guy from a Fangio tree. I need to look more into the Fangio tree to see that. But I want the person who is on a trajectory of, A, they're hungry to prove. And you thought Eberflus would be hungry to prove. But for whatever reason, the football was not right between him and the players. And it seems like this guy right here has his secondary playing at a level that is the quality that you want for the future of your team. Again, this isn't the only option. There are lots of options. And actually, Kevin,
you're up to 7 interviews now.
Right now, this is the first time I've felt during coaching searches the Cowboys have brought in good options.
Yeah.
More than just one.
Yeah.
To suffice the, like, you know how you do the, hey, bring in 3.
Yeah.
One they're going to hate, one they're going to love that they can't afford, and then one that we're going to give them.
Or
this seems like you're giving them all the options, and you're bringing in more and more good ones.
Or it felt like at the bare minimum they brought in the Rooney Rule candidates and the person they were actually going to hire. And so,
that is true.
And you don't
want
that.
To be quite honest, Kevin, the other day I saw there was a name that popped up, and
it was
the
Ravens.
And
right?
Yeah, and I went, okay, there's 2. That's what, for the longest time, it's felt like that was the Cowboys' approach was, we have a minimum we got to get to, guys.
Yeah.
And this one feels like, no, we just want to know who the ones with the best ideas are.
And by the way, in case people care about this, because we were discussing this and doing our own research, and the only reason I think Orr stood out is because you're like, man, that Ravens defense was so bad.
But he is local, and that kind of makes sense.
In accordance with the Rooney Rule, when it comes to coordinators, head coaches, and general managers, you have to interview at least 2 minority candidates. By the way, a new wrinkle that the NFL threw in a little bit ago is you can interview a woman candidate, and that counts as a minority candidate as well, even if she is white, in case you were curious about that. You don't have to interview a woman candidate, but if you do, that counts towards your bare minimum of 2 on that front. And also, the NFL has a fund that they distribute money for to make sure that every single team in the NFL has at least 1 black coach on the offensive coaching staff, because their study, along with the Rooney Rule, because they're looking to, one of the things they talked about with getting more minority head coaches is not enough opportunities. And they found the majority of opportunities had come via the offensive side of the ball. So every team in the NFL has at least 1 black coach on the offensive coaching staff, of which the NFL pays part of that salary. Just as an aside, if you are curious about any of that. So Christian Parker, another interview, that is 7. Now, to tie up one other loose end, the discussion about Josh Allen. Multiple people asked about Josh Allen because he scores a lot of rushing touchdowns. So I decided to look into that. So you take the last 6 years, because that's when Josh Allen started scoring all of the touchdowns. So starting in his third year, 2020, that's when he's like, you know, it'd be cool scoring 40 touchdowns every single year. And that makes sense. That is very cool. How many times out of those 6 years, if I combine passing and rushing touchdown, do you think he would have led quarterbacks in touchdowns?
I'm going to go with one.
That is correct. One time.
Because Lamar exists, and sometimes his passing touchdowns have taken a hit because of the way that they've called the games. And so he's taken like 20-something touchdowns, but you really don't get as many rushing touchdowns as you think.
Yes, that is true. It was in 2023 when Dak Prescott led the league in passing touchdowns. I believe he had 36. He also had four rushing touchdowns. That year, Josh Allen had a total of 44 touchdowns.
Was that the year that Dak finished second in MVP voting?
I do believe that is correct.
Nobody talked about that much.
Yes, we all know. Uh-huh. The four of the other years, Josh Allen's combined touchdowns wouldn't have even been more than any quarterback had a passing touchdowns. The only other interesting exception is in 2022, Josh Allen had a combined 42 touchdowns. But if you factor in rushing touchdowns, Patrick Mahomes had 45.
Okay.
So that is 1 year for Josh Allen, and I absolutely think that should be factored in, especially with the way that the NFL has shifted, and that goes to part of our Hall of Fame question. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, this time, I really, really mean it. Baseball nuggets. Do MLB front office folks think the Rangers front office is any good? This time, for real. Next on The Fan.
What's up? It's Draymond Green. I'm back for my 14th NBA season, and my podcast, The Draymond Green Show, is back too. This season, I'm breaking down games, reacting to the biggest NBA stories, and sitting down with teammates, rivals, and culture shapers. And trust me, I'm not holding back, on the court or on the mic. Two new episodes every week, new segments, big conversations, real basketball talk for the real hoop heads. Listen to and follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts. We're back, we're better, let's get it.